I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For nearly an hour and a half this morning, Secretary Powell presented the case that Iraq is in defiance of demands that it disarm. He played the sound of intercepted conversations between Iraqi officials, which he said proves they are trying to hide their illegal weapons before UN inspectors arrived. He showed photographs, presumably from spy satellites, that he said proves how Iraq has sanitized weapon sites before inspectors arrived. And he presented information from human sources that he said proves just how dangerous Iraq's weapons program really is. Secretary Powell said UN Resolution 1441 is designed to give Iraq one last chance to show it is disarming. Iraq, he says, has not taken that chance. He challenged the Security Council to do, as he put it, quote, what is necessary to see that its will is enforced. This hour, a close look at the evidence. How convincing is it? Is there any other way to interpret it? And what about the connection with Al-Qaeda and terrorism? We'll talk with experts about all those questions and more, but we first turn to NPR's Mike Schuster, who joins us from NPR West in Los Angeles. Mike?
Hello, Neil.
And here with us in Studio 3A, NPR senior news analyst Daniel Schorr.
Daniel. Hi, Neil.
And Mike, I just wanted to ask you, first of all, about the presentation overall. Secretary Powell began with a long statement on Iraq's deception of Iraq of weapons inspectors.
He started with a long presentation about the deception or concealment efforts that the United States and weapons inspectors believe is underway in Iraq. He then went on to touch on a number of important questions about whether Iraq and how much Iraq has of its chemical, biological weapons, nuclear programs, missiles, and other means of delivering these weapons. And then he ended with actually a fairly detailed, more detailed case than we've heard so far of possible links between Al-Qaeda and Iraq.
You follow these things quite closely. What did you hear that was new?
Well, first, the three intercepted communications and the several satellite photos that the United States showed in the Security Council are all new. We haven't heard those conversations before, and we haven't seen those pictures. And the conversations were quite interesting. The first that he played was from November 26, 2002, the day before inspections began in Iraq, and it was between a general and a colonel in the field and the general is heard saying he's worried about something is left. He is told by the colonel we evacuated everything and that we don't have everything left. The second conversation that was played was from January 30th, 2003. Again, two officers talking about cleaning out the whole area and destroying this message as they speak. And then a third communications intercept that Powell said was from a few days ago between a colonel and a captain in the field, in which they talk about removing any references to nerve agents in wireless instructions, which I take to mean some kind of written communications.
Mike, so, for those of us who joined us late, let's listen to that particular sound clip again. Two Iraqis talking about removing the words nerve agents from wireless communications.
Ibrahim.
We are
Rafa.
رفع
عبارت
عبارت
عوامل الأعصاب
عوامل الأعصاب
أينما وردت
أينما وردت.
That conversation clearly in Arabic. A translation was presented on a large screen inside the Security Council as those words were heard.
Yeah, and what Secretary of State Powell underlined was the several references to removing the words nerve agents from wireless instructions, the expression wherever it comes up, I think he quoted the speakers as saying.
Daniel Schorr, we heard a lengthy presentation, very detailed, methodical, almost an hour and a half. Did Secretary Powell said going in he did not have a smoking gun? Did he present a convincing case?
Well, the question of whether he presented a convincing case will be decided by whether he's convinced any of the countries which are hanging back from the prospective war against Iraq from joining on our side. There was no indication today that Russia, France, China, Germany, the four most important nations involved here, had changed their mind. Powell spoke as though we've tried, we gave them their last chance, they blew it. They didn't take that chance. They were hiding. They are still hiding things. Furthermore, they have connections with terrorists. which threatened not only the United States, but he listed a bunch of European countries, France, Britain, Spain, Italy, Germany, which he cogently said are also threatened by this. But if you listen to the responses, some of which looked as though they'd been prepared before he spoke, and apparently it may not be the last word. But as of now, we are left with a powerful statement. In order to make that statement, Secretary Powell had to overcome some misgivings of the intelligence community about whether you could play tapes like this and all of that. George Tenet, director of the CIA, sat behind him as though watching over the CIA's secrets that were being given out here. And at the end of it, you had this powerful, but quite powerful presentation by Powell, the dove turned hawk, who at points his own voice shook a little bit as he did this. And then you waited for the responses. The responses were, let's give peace a chance, let's give inspection another chance, let's go in again. And so I'm afraid not much would change. America's preparing for war. Much of the rest of the world is not. Where that will leave America and its relations with the rest of the world is tomorrow's problem.
Mike Schuster, let's look a little bit more closely. As you said, he then went on to talk about the idea of weapons of mass destruction. We've heard from the United Nations inspectors, Mohammed El-Baradei on the nuclear side and Hans Blix on chemical, biological weapons and weapon and delivery systems, ballistic missiles. One of the things that Secretary Powell talked about was something we've heard about for years, but today we got much more detail on, and that is mobile biological laboratories.
Yeah, that's right, Neil. In fact, Powell presented more detailed information about these alleged mobile bio facilities than we've ever heard before. He said that Iraq has 7 mobile bio factories, which include 18 big trucks, and they didn't show satellite photographs of these trucks. They showed computer drawings or computer depictions of what they might look like. This is based on the evidence of defectors, Powell said, who say they were there when these mobile biological weapons facilities were working. And in fact, he said that one defector, who he wouldn't identify or even say where he is in the world, said that there was in 1998, there was an accident where a number of Iraqi scientists or workers around these trucks actually were killed. He said as a result of the weapons that they were producing. Powell said that these mobile trucks that produce bioweapons can produce in one day more anthrax and botulinum toxin than was produced by Iraq in its factories before the 1991 war. It's an extraordinary allegation, because we do know that Iraq produced quite a good amount, a large amount of anthrax and botulinum toxin, and tried to put it into weapons before the Gulf War. And the weapons inspectors in the 1990s didn't even discover it until 1995, and then they managed to destroy some of it in some of those facilities. I should point out, though, that Hans Blix, the chief UN weapons inspector with responsibility for biological weapons, has said that so far his inspectors have not uncovered any evidence of these facilities.
In part, Secretary Powell says, because Iraqi intelligence agents are in cars driving them around the country so they can't be found. At one point, though, Mike, did I hear him correctly suggest that these weapons may have actually been deployed by the Iraqi army?
I did as well, Neil. Earlier in his presentation to the Security Council, Secretary of State Powell said that the Iraqis were dispersing rocket launchers and biological warheads in western Iraq. It's a very important allegation. Obviously, any kind of U.S. Military action in Iraq is going to want to know where those rocket launchers with possible biological warheads are, and would presumably act to disable them.
Daniel Schorr, as you said, many of the countries in response to Secretary Powell continued to say, we need more inspections. France suggested enhanced inspections.
Yes.
Cameroon suggested Kofi Annan go to Iraq. Russia suggested that this all means that we may need another resolution, or maybe two, suggesting that if Secretary Powell may have been convincing on the evidence, he was not convincing to them on the urgency, at least not today. And that seemed to hinge on his presentation on what seems to concern most people the most, and that is links to terrorism.
That's right. And Powell tried very hard, and he deduced all the evidence he could to try to indicate that there is a link. He made a specific allegation that his link went through somebody named, I've lost his name here now.
Zarqawi.
Zarqawi, who's been in and out of Baghdad, has been in the hospital in Baghdad, all of that. And that is the case. Now, that has been controversial even within the Bush administration. And so it had to be a really tough decision to go out and say this, because not everybody in the administration believes there has been any close relationship. Now, we don't have to necessarily believe Saddam Hussein, who said, if I had a connection with al-Qaeda, I would be proud to say so. We don't have any connection with him. Well, we don't believe him. But the fact of the matter is that less than as persuasive as other parts of his presentation was this statement that there is this very close working connection between the Iraqi government and the al-Qaeda, the terrorists.
Mike Schuster, what is the schedule of events from here? And I guess the next thing to happen is the departure of the two chief weapons inspectors, Mr. El-Baradei and Hans Blix, to Baghdad, where they are due this weekend.
That's right. They were invited, in fact, by the Iraqi government a few days ago to come back to Baghdad, and they are both going this weekend. And then next week, on February 14th, I believe, we expect them to come back to the Security Council and make an additional presentation. Although I think that as a result of Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the Security Council today, there could be additional meetings. Obviously, the United States started a discussion of its allegations that Iraq is not in compliance and in material breach of Resolution 1441. And to a certain degree, the United States can now drive the pace of discussions within the Security Council about what to do about that noncompliance, and that could go on those discussions could go on a parallel path with continued weapons inspections and any additional reports the chief weapons inspectors might bring back to the Council.
The actions of the inspectors now becomes crucial to what happens next. They go to Baghdad and they come back. And if they indicate in their next report on February 14th that Powell was right about this, then it's finished. That would be the last inspection. If they indicate otherwise, then the United States is put in the rather difficult position of whether to say, in spite of what the inspectors say, we intend now to go to serious consequences that Secretary Powell talked about today. So this is a very tense period between today and February the 14th.
Daniel Shore, thank you very much, as always, for being with us here in Studio 3A.
My pleasure.
And Mike Schuster from the studios of NPR West in Los Angeles, I always appreciate your help.
Thank you, Neil.
When we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking with other experts about the quality of the evidence presented by Secretary Powell to the United Nations Security Council today, what it means, and where we go from here. You're listening to a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan, speaking to you from Studio 3A in Washington. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the evidence Colin Powell presented to the United Nations Security Council earlier today. Secretary of State Powell presented tape recordings, satellite photos, and statements showing what he described as irrefutable and undeniable evidence that Saddam Hussein is concealing weapons of mass destruction. Is the evidence irrefutable? Is Secretary Powell's proof enough to sway American allies to support the war? Joining us now here in Studio 3A is William Arkin, a Los Angeles Times columnist and NBC News military analyst. Bill Arkin was formerly director of disarmament for Greenpeace International from 1986 to 1992. Bill Arkin, good to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much.
And Ruel Gerecht is with us. He's resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute here in Washington, formerly a Middle Eastern specialist for the Central Intelligence Agency from 1985 to 1995. And hello, always good to speak with you as well.
My pleasure.
Let's begin. Bill Arkin, irrefutable and undeniable evidence. Do you agree?
Well, nothing in intelligence is ever irrefutable and undeniable. And so I think today we saw a really good performance, a compilation of the best of what the United States knew and was willing to reveal. What struck me was how much of the information that came out today was post-2002 or was sort of information that came out post-September 11th. And why I say that is because it gives you an indicator of the fact that much of what we're seeing today is amplification of what we already knew, which is the ways in which Iraq goes about deceiving, the ways in which Iraq goes about hiding what it is that it has, But I think if anyone were waiting and looking for a smoking gun today, they would be disappointed. In fact, I would say that of everything that was said today, the most interesting new information that came out was the terrorism information, the Al-Qaeda connections. The weapons of mass destruction stuff really had already leaked out in various forms in the past, and we were well aware of the fact that Iraq already had a huge weapons of mass destruction from 1991. It's not like this is news. And so I think that really the significant new intelligence information, which has been revealed, again, and mostly it's post-September 11th information, is the degree to which Al-Qaeda has been flushed out of Afghanistan and other places and may have reorganized itself for operations from Iraq.
Before and after satellite photographs of weapon sites showing before sanitization and after sanitization, audio intercepts of Iraqi officers speaking to each other about evacuating the special materials, that sort of thing. Irrefutable proof?
Yeah. I mean, I think the information on Saddam Hussein on weapons of mass destruction was overwhelming before Colin Powell's presentation today. I think that he did a bravura performance of adding to it and giving further complimentary information. In particular, I thought the intercept information that they gave was more specific than I anticipated, and it was quite good. Intercept information is often very difficult to handle, but when it is gold, it is truly it's pure.
You couldn't find an alternative explanation for any of those conversations?
I suppose you could work at it, but once again, it's sort of like putting your hand behind your head. I think in dealing with these things, you have to take the more straightforward explanation. And I suppose if you try hard, you could try to find some other explanation. But given the context of it happening in Iraq and Saddam Hussein's Iraq, I don't think so.
Bill Arkin, how reliable is this evidence? Iraq, of course, immediately described it. I think before they saw it, they described it as fabrication and lies. Is this evidence that can stand up to charges that it was tampered with?
I don't think it can stand up to those charges. Let's remember again that we're talking about a country that at one point we knew that they had 300,000 tons of chemical and biological agents. Now we're arguing whether or not they have a few hundreds or thousands of tons remaining. So there's no mystery about the fact that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. No one should be surprised about that. I think that some of the evidence revealed today is elliptical at best. That's the nature of the intelligence business. I look at the one wonderful satellite photograph of the Al-Qaeda facility in northern Iraq and Kurdistan, labeled a chemical and biological weapons facility with a name associated with it, a compound. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, I know how the intelligence business works. I was in intelligence at one time myself, and somebody labeled that picture suspect chemical facility, and the word suspect was removed on its way to the briefing. Because who would want to present a satellite photograph that said suspect? Because you have to ask yourself the question, if it's not suspect, if there is an actual Al-Qaeda chemical facility in northern Iraq, why the United States would not have already bombed it or attacked it with special operations forces is absolutely inconceivable. So, in fact, it is a suspect facility. So is there a little bit of overstatement of what we know based upon a history of what we know? I think the answer is probably yes. But does it change the picture in the end of the fact that Iraq is pursuing biological and chemical agents at the very time when inspectors are in country? I think the answer is no.
Ruel Gerecht, again, on these intercept conversations, like most people, I don't speak Arabic. How can we vouch for accuracy? Could they be faked? The Iraqi ambassador said he even heard words that were misinterpreted in the American translation.
Well, one, on the issue of being faked, the NSA, the U.S. government's not going to fake those intercepts. Now, is the linguistic issue a real issue? Sure it is. It's always an issue in dealing with intercept. However, I would suggest that, again, the United States government has been handling intercept for quite some time, and when you have specific information and you devote a great deal of manpower to it, and I suspect a lot of people have listened to those tapes, that you start to eliminate the margin of error, which often occurs with just the routine process of intercept. So though the United States government doesn't have as many people as it ought to handle Arabic intercept, it does have quite competent people, and when they focus on specific intercepts, I think you can rely upon those translations.
I'll give you a little bit of a different interpretation. The intercepts I don't think are faked. I think that's total red herring. I do know from my own experience in dealing with Arabic translators and specialists in the U.S. military that sometimes these are really questions of interpretation. But there was one particular intercept that interested me because Powell made a big deal about it, and it was when they said, after you're done doing what you're supposed to be doing, you have to destroy this message. And Powell said, oh, well, why would they want to destroy the message? And it seemed to me that what that intercept was saying was, we don't want UNMOVIC, the UN inspectors, to know that we know what they're doing. And since they have the right to go and look at your files, one thing we want to do for counterintelligence purposes is tell you what we want you to do and then tell you to destroy the message because we don't want UNMOVIC to find out that we can monitor them in real time. That's a very innocent explanation, kind of in counterintelligence terms, and yet Powell makes a very big deal about it in terms of saying somehow that this indicates that what they're destroying is a message that is specifically about weapons of mass destruction. So I think that there are going to be interpretive points to be made about what we saw in the evidence that was put out today, but I think the overwhelming sum of the evidence really points to the fact that Iraq is actively pursuing biological and chemical agents and the ability to deliver them while we are debating whether or not we should go to war.
Well, joining us now is Amy Smithson, a director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Henry L. Stimson Center here in Washington, D.C. And Amy, good of you to join us.
My pleasure to be with you.
Just following on from Bill Arkin's point, would you agree?
Oh, it's definite, and it's been known for quite some time that the Iraqis have been in hot pursuit of chemical and biological weapons capabilities of an ever-growing sophistication. This is a country that has, of course, used chemical weapons and denied for years to United Nations inspectors having a biological weapons capability. We all know that to be the case now.
What was the most important thing you heard today about chemical weapons?
Oh, in the chemical weapons area, what got my attention was the authorization to use chemical agents, apparently in an upcoming conflict, should it occur. And the quantity that the United States is estimating that the Iraqis still have on hand being ranging from 100 to 500 tons, and if it's the larger quantity, saying that that was sufficient to fill 1,600 rockets. And that's a fair amount of chemical weapons that U.S. troops might have to face or coalition troops might have to face. The other thing that got my attention was, of course, satellite evidence of active removal of chemical munitions, precursors, or capabilities during the current round of inspections as the inspectors are coming into the front entryway to a facility. Things are heading out the back. This isn't a new activity for the Iraqis to have engaged in. We know they did that during the past round of inspections, but it's disturbing to see that they're still up to their old games. And last but not least, the news that there was apparently a round of experimentation on prisoners in the mid-1990s. Some 1,600 prisoners where there are human defectors saying that they were experimented on with chemical and or biological agents.
What about the statement that we heard yesterday from Saddam Hussein in his interview with Tony Benn? He says, chemical and biological weapons programs, this isn't something you can hide in an aspirin tablet. This is a major industrial capability. If it's there, it should be very easy to find.
I would agree with the characterization of a chemical weapons production being a fairly major industrial undertaking, because to have a militarily significant quantity of chemical agent, you have to have a fairly large infrastructure, a plant that would be visible certainly from satellites and aerial overflights. However, for a biological weapons manufacturer that results in a militarily significant quantity, this can be done in a rather small room, or as the United States is now alleging and has been for quite some time, in mobile production capabilities.
Let's go to Mark, to Ruel Gerecht, and ask about the what Amy Smithson was just talking about, the dispersal of some of these weapons, at least according to Secretary Powell, into the field, authorization, again, according to Secretary Powell, for their use. What does that suggest to you?
Well, I mean, I think that certainly the preeminent fear has to be that Saddam Hussein will attempt to use some of these weapons in the coming war.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask it another way, because he was talking at that point about human intelligence, this information gleaned from sources. Yes, it's the Secretary of State of the United States. Yes, it's Colin Powell. How believable is that?
Well, I mean, human sources are always, they can be tricky things. I think given the quantity of information they've had on this, given the time that we have known about Saddam Hussein's deceptive techniques, given how important it was to the regime that his own son-in-law for a long time was in charge of these programs, it makes sense. And the key to having any type of intelligence, whether it be human or technical intelligence, is does it fit in the overall pattern? Does it make sense? And I would suggest that the information that came from human sources did fit with the rest of the information that we have on Saddam Hussein's regime from as far back as the mid-1970s.
Bill Arkin, some of the information from human sources, Secretary Powell said, was from defectors. Some of the others, he said, was from detainees. Human Rights Watch, among others, has alleged that some of this information may have been acquired by torture. How reliable is it?
Well, I think, again, the information is reliable because it's not based upon one source. I think that we shouldn't, however, overestimate the importance of the information when we know that the absolute priority of the American government is to collect information relating to Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. There is a tendency to look and then to see. You can do surveillance of a country because you are doing general surveillance, and then all of a sudden a presidential directive or a war comes around, and everybody is primed to look for one thing, weapons of mass destruction. Every defector, every human agent, every intercept is looked at to see what piece of evidence is going to support that very thing. And I think that the U.S. government, I would be very happy to say it, is obsessed about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. And yet at the same time, we're talking about a capability that is militarily meaningless. And so therefore, we sort of have two problems associated with Powell's presentation today. One is that some people will look at it and be scared, that they will say, well, if we go to war against Iraq, they're going to use these weapons of mass destruction, and that's going to be Armageddon. And I think that there's a far cry between the ability of Iraq perhaps to get the use of one or two chemical weapons or biological weapons and Armageddon. That's a fairly broad spectrum. And so people shouldn't be afraid as a result of the revelations today that somehow this means that war can't be fought. And then I think on the other hand, there's also a tendency to overestimate Iraqi capabilities, which is to say, because Iraq is deceptive and because they're trying to preserve their weapons of mass destruction and because they're basically a duplicitous dictatorship, that justifies going to war because they have chemical and biological weapons, and that in itself is crossing some threshold that makes them an immediate threat to the United States. And again, given the quantities that we're talking about and given the comparison with what Iraq had 12 years ago, this is so infinitesimal, one has to really be able to make a much more strong argument that says that this constitutes an immediate threat. I think that argument doesn't exist.
We're going to be talking about more about that in a few minutes when we get on to the discussion about the links to terrorism. But Amy Smithson, before we let you go, there was evidence, as Mike Schuster was talking about earlier, about these mobile laboratories in trucks or in rail cars. We saw, again, sketches, drawings of what they might look like, not pictures. Is that conceivable to you? Can you really produce a weapons lab on trucks?
Yes, unfortunately, it is quite conceivable, and we know that when the Soviet biological weapons program was at full steam, this is something that they had under active consideration because they, too, feared that inspectors one day might come on the hunt. In this particular diagram that has been released, what you see appears to be a production truck, a storage truck, and a truck where the material is harvested, separated, dried, and then filled into munitions. And what comes to mind here, if they do have seven or so groups of these trucks, is Washington, D.C. last October, last fall, when we had snipers on the run. How do you find that number of trucks amidst, you know, a large metropolitan area or even a country as large as Iraq? It's a tremendous challenge to try to keep track of this capability.
Given that suggestion, do Secretary Powell's figures on the amount of material that those things can produce and the methods of production, he said they would begin Thursday night, so on the understanding the inspectors wouldn't come on a Friday and get done by Friday night, does all that seem to jive with what you know about the production capability?
Well, if I understood his comments, he was talking about the methods they were using for their sites that are permanent, sites like Al-Hakam and the like, which has already been destroyed, because they would undertake production there over a Muslim holiday in order to avoid inspection, assuming that the inspectors wouldn't come during a holiday. In this particular case, these are mobile capabilities that the inspectors will have a tremendous challenge finding, and that was my allusion to how difficult it was to track down the snipers here in the Washington, D.C. area. There were an awful lot of white vans stopped, even though they never actually found the white van that was suspected. It ended up being another vehicle entirely. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the time frame, it's going to take a couple of days to ferment the material and to process it and weaponize it. Yes.
Amy Smithson, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Amy Smithson, Director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Henry L. Stimson Center in Washington, D.C. When we come back, we're going to look at the evidence on nuclear weapons and evidence of Iraq's links of terrorism, and we're going to begin taking your phone calls. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-8255. You can also send email questions to totn@npr.org. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You're listening to Special Report from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the case that Secretary of State Colin Powell presented this morning to the United Nations Security Council that Iraq is still deceiving United Nations weapons inspectors, continues to produce chemical and biological weapons, and is continuing to work on nuclear weapons programs, and is also, he detailed allegations that Iraq is linked to terrorism and specifically to an Al-Qaeda cell. With me here in Studio 3A is William Arkin, consultant on military affairs, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times, NBC News military analyst, and formerly director of disarmament for Greenpeace International. We had to say goodbye to Ruel Gerecht of the American Enterprise Institute, and we thank him for joining us today. Bill Arkin, on the nuclear weapons portfolio, if you will, had always been described as the weakest of the three areas of weapons of mass destruction, of chemical, biological. The evidence of nuclear weapons in recent years has always been considered the weakest.
Well, I think we can pretty much dispense with it today, Neil. I think that Colin Powell released information which we had already known about, Iraqi efforts to obtain a variety of specialty goods in Western Europe and elsewhere in the world. We knew about most of this before. The acquisition of enough material to actually build a nuclear weapon is far beyond Iraq's capability today, both technically and under sanctions. And I don't think that this has ever been anyone's concern per se. It's just part of the same portfolio of weapons of mass destruction. I don't think Colin Powell went any further today on nuclear weapons, and no one really expected that he would have.
But the famous aluminum tubes.
Well, I guess we're going to argue about this by having my physicist call your physicist ad infinitum. A lot of people say that this is not of much concern, and a lot of people say that it is. Powell even alluded to the fact that there had been a very controversial debate about this in his presentation at the UN today. But again, the creation of a nuclear capability is dependent upon having fissile material, having uranium and plutonium that is of weapons grade and enough to actually manufacture a bomb out of. And we know that Iraq doesn't have that. And so whether or not it is building the shell of a nuclear weapon, having a nuclear capability is still something that's far beyond their reach.
One of the most important allegations that the Secretary of State made today was on links to terrorism. He made no allegation whatsoever that Iraq was in any way involved with 9/11. Put that to rest right now. It did not come up anywhere in the Secretary of State's presentation. But he did talk about Iraq's relationships with a cell of al-Qaeda, and in particular, one man. And joining us now is Washington Post reporter Walter Pincus, who covers national security affairs. He wrote an article in today's newspaper on American efforts to establish the link between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. And Mr. Pincus, good of you to join us.
Nice to be here.
And I wanted to ask you specifically, who is this man, and what did Secretary Powell, in your mind, provide sufficient evidence of his links to al-Qaeda?
Well, I think what he did was to identify a Jordanian-born Palestinian named Zakari, who has its own network and clearly is a substantial figure in the terrorism world. He has contacts with al-Qaeda. He made that very clear. He taught in the Afghan training camps that al-Qaeda ran during the 1990s. But what he's done since, and he's been very active with his own group, whether they're directed by al-Qaeda or done in conjunction with al-Qaeda, is still something we're looking into.
The man's name is Abu Musab Zarqawi, and we heard allegations that he's been in and out of Afghanistan, in and out of Baghdad. Any way to confirm any of that?
Well, I think there's general confirmation that he did go to Baghdad in May of 2002. He went there because he had been wounded in the leg in the fighting in Afghanistan. He spent some time in Iran, and ironically, he was a figure who was alluded to by Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld the past summer as illustrating that Iran was cooperating with al-Qaeda. He then went on to Baghdad, supposedly had his leg amputated and an artificial leg put on. And then sometime in July or August, the Jordanian government, which had a warrant out for his arrest because he was involved in the Millennium bombing, the attempts to bomb a Radisson Hotel in Amman in 1999, they asked the Iraqi government to turn him over. And the next thing I think that I understand happened is that he departed Baghdad. Mm-hmm. What we learned today is...
So Jordan was the friendly government that Mr. Powell was referring to.
Jordan was the friendly government. And what Secretary Powell added to that story is that while Zakari was in Baghdad, he was visited by what the secretary described as two dozen extremists. The best definition I've gotten so far about that is that they were people who were loyal to him. They're not described as al-Qaeda people. At another point, they're described perhaps as al-Qaeda affiliates. And so these terrorist groups around the world do have connections with each other, but a lot of them have separate goals, separate ideas. What happens after that is that he also was associated there was an October 28th assassination, a terrible assassination, of Lawrence Foley, an AID worker in Amman, and in late October. And in December, the two people arrested for that crime said they too were followers of Zakari, and said that he had put him up to it. He had supplied him with the guns and ammunition and also money. And so that was another reason to look for Zakari. Mm-hmm. But again, Zakari seems to be operating on his own, although some of the people he occasionally apparently talks to are connected to al-Qaeda.
Bill Arkin, you said that the amounts of chemical, biological weapons, militarily insignificant in the hands of terrorists, could this be a very different story? And as Secretary Powell said, a lot of people question whether a secular leader like Saddam Hussein would have contacts to the extent of trusting someone like Osama bin Laden with biological or weapons of mass destruction. He said he is not comforted by that argument.
Well, I'm not comforted by the fact that there are chemical and biological agents in a variety of countries in the Middle East, from Saudi Arabia to Libya, Syria, and Iraq. They all have chemical and biological weapons programs. And so I think that the possibility that they might fall into the hands of terrorists either by being stolen or intentionally, of course, is a concern that we should all have. I didn't think we necessarily got any further today on the question of a chemical or biological weapons link to al-Qaeda or to terrorists, but I certainly heard greater evidence today than I'd heard before indicating that there was an active presence of terrorist organizations that had been flushed out of Afghanistan. And whether or not Zarqawi is actually al-Qaeda or not is splitting hairs, because clearly he went to Iraq as a result of our war against terrorism in Afghanistan. And I think that that gives you a sense of the fact that Iraq serves as a bit of a safe haven for terrorist organizations and terrorism around the world. I think that the question that sort of lingers as a result of this today is, to what degree is there any common cause between the Iraq and terrorist organizations in its battle against the United States? And I guess up till now, I would say to you that there's been very little evidence to indicate that that was the case. I've seen very little to indicate that Iraq really had ever resorted to terrorism in its various fights against the U.S. However, today, with the discussion of the pre-delegation of authority to use chemical and biological agents to Iraqi officials by Saddam Hussein, to the suggestion of there being a link in chemical and biological agents with terrorist organizations and an upcoming war on top of it, it seems to me that somehow perhaps the level of possibility of there being terrorist use of chemical and biological weapons is being increased significantly. Whether or not that is actually provoked by our war on terrorism and the potential war in Iraq, or was the design from the beginning, I guess will be a question that will remain open.
Let's get some questions from our listeners. Joining us now is Kathy, who's on the line from Athens, Ohio.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering whether it was true when the Iraqi representative to the UN said that the UN inspectors took samples from all over the country and concluded that there was no evidence of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons.
Bill Arkin, is that accurate?
Well, it's not accurate. When the last UN inspection team called UNSCOM completed its work in November 1998, when they were thrown out of the country, they submitted their final report to the United Nations, which laid out all of the loose ends of what they had discovered when they had done their 8 years of inspections prior to that time. And that is the basis, if you will, of where Colin Powell says there's X number of tons of anthrax missing, there's X number of tons of botulinum missing, etc. It comes from that UNSCOM baseline. And UNMOVIC went in there with the intent of trying to clean up these various files, if you will, to try to understand whether or not the Iraqis could substantiate that those aspects of their chemical and biological capability that UNSCOM had uncovered but yet had not been able to verify or destroy themselves could now be resolved. And so, in fact, when Iraq says that UNMOVIC or UNSCOM has given them a clean bill of health, it's completely false, because really what we're talking about here is a wide variety of accounting problems in which the UN has constantly asked Iraq to substantiate its claim that these things were not produced or were destroyed, and Iraq has failed to be able to substantiate those claims.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Quickly.
Why did the U.S. hold back this evidence from the U.N. inspectors so that the U.N. inspectors could conduct a more thorough investigation if there's any new information here? Why didn't they give it before?
Walter Pincus, you want to take a shot at that?
Well, I think they've been gradually feeding information. piecemeal, but when you look at the specifics, take the mobile labs. We have said publicly we believe, the U.S. believes, that there are these mobile labs, but because they're mobile, we couldn't tell them where they are. With regard to the satellite photos that showed chemical sites being, or what we say allegedly being emptied out and then the ground being bulldozed so you couldn't find them. They've been to those sites, so they know about those sites. I don't think they've withheld anything that you saw today from the inspectors.
Kathy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Did you want to add anything to that, Bill?
Well, I think that the real $64,000 question that comes out of Colin Powell's presentation today is, why are we learning some of these details today? Look, it just has to be asked. Whether you are in favor of war in Iraq or not, you have to wonder whether or not they haven't marshaled certain information for the very purpose of convincing people when people need to be convinced, which is to say to me that they've always been convinced that they wanted to go to war against Iraq. They've always been convinced that that Iraq represented a sufficient security threat to the United States to justify the use of force, even if the United Nations didn't agree. And so what we saw today in the presentation did raise questions in my mind as to whether or not we had shared everything with the UN that we could have shared. And my guess is that it's more sort of a combination of bureaucratic and policy issues that stood in the way of giving the UN everything that we had, because the belief was, well, we weren't going to get a UN resolution. Oh, well, then we did get a UN resolution. And then, well, the UN wasn't really going to get to do its work. And then, oh, my God, the UN did get to do its work. And then the UN was going to be finished with its work in 8 weeks because Iraq was not going to produce what it produced. And then, oh, my God, Iraq did produce what it produced. And then we are going to get another resolution. And then we didn't get a resolution. And so I think that as this has unfolded,
one more interpretation that any information you give to the UN is going to be discovered by Iraqi intelligence.
Well, there's certainly that was the implications today of Iraq's very competent monitoring of U.S. The UN's activities. And we saw that really in spades in Powell's presentation today.
And Walter Pincus, we just have about a minute or so left. I'd like to give you the final word.
Well, I think what Secretary Powell did was to be more specific than any of either the president or Secretary Rumsfeld or even Vice President Cheney's been before, in an attempt to sort of marshal more support. I think that it was an interesting presentation. Concealment was what was supposed to be the focus, to show that Iraq was really supposed to come forward and disclose everything. We have gotten into this sort of cat and mouse playing detective and showing brief excerpts to show that we know that they have been doing things that they shouldn't be doing, and trying to get support, not so much in the UN, because I think you can see the way that vote is probably going to go over the next week or two, but also to tell the public at large and the importance of Mr. Zarqawi's introduction to the world is that this is somebody who has clearly gotten plots, if you looked at those charts, in London, France, Germany, to bring the Europeans in to show they are as much in danger by terrorists that are being harbored by Iraq as perhaps the United States is.
Walter Pincus, thank you very much from the Washington Post. And he is a reporter for the Washington Post. And Bill Arkin, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Bill Arkin is a consultant on military affairs and also an NBC military analyst. Coverage of all of this will continue on NPR News. Stay with us. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan.